Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gatehouse Florida. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the holiday edition of Inside Florida Politics. I'm your host, Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor, Zach Anderson. I'm filling in for George Bennett, who is off probably finishing up his Christmas shopping or something. No, we don't have Santa on this episode, but we do have the next best thing, Gatehouse Capitol Bureau Chief John Kennedy. Hello, John.
Hi, Zach.
And we're also joined by Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns. Hello, Antonio.
Hey, Zach. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. You know, it's been kind of a quiet week in Florida politics as the holidays approach. There are a few things to chat about, though. Trump will be here later in the week to start his own holiday vacation. There was also some important state budget news that came out this week. But first, I hear some funky royalty-free music playing, which means it's time for our Pick a Number segment. We'll tell you what these numbers mean at the end of the podcast. John, do you have a number?
I sure do, Zach. Mine is three.
Three. Nice and simple. All right. How about you, Antonio?
Mine will be nice and complicated. 122,916.
122,916.
You haven't seen a number like that since Kennedy was giving out the how much money was spent in the elections.
Yeah, I think I beat you last week. I had a little bit higher. We're talking about the number of federal employees in Florida. But my number is going to be right in the middle there. It's 2006. And again, we'll tell you what those numbers mean at the end of the podcast. Well, it's almost Christmas time in Florida, which means Air Force One will soon be landing in Palm Beach. My colleagues over at the Palm Beach Post are always up to speed on all things Mar-a-Lago. Antonio, tell us a little bit about Trump's vacation plans over the holidays.
Well, for us, it's Christmas twofold. We get the holiday, plus we get the bounty of news that will come with the president here. And, you know, this is going to be a really interesting one because, first of all, it'll be his longest stay here since he became president. It's going to be he arrives on the 21st and then will be here for 16 days, which is much longer than any other stay that he's had here since he became president. And I think it's going to be kind of interesting that there's a lot of drama this time around. It's off the heels of the midterm bath that the Republicans took in the U.S. House and in governorships across the country, although here in Florida, you can argue that, you know, that they actually did pretty well winning the governor's race and the U.S. Senate race, in which Mr. Trump figured big in both of those races. So he will find some solace here. But, you know, it comes at a time that, you know, this shakeup also in the White House West Wing. You know, there'll be an acting chief of staff and other issues. So he, you know, coming on the heels also of, you know, perhaps a government shutdown or not. But it's going to be a really interesting 2 weeks. I mean, I'm sure that we'll see the same, you know, patterns as before, where he'll go and he'll play some golf here. And but, you know, I'm sure that he'll make some appearances and have some few talks with the press. Last time on Thanksgiving, it was our reporter, Chelsea Dodaro, who you had on the show shortly after, who was the one that had asked a question about the border. And he said he would shut down the border. And sure enough, by the end of the weekend, there was this border crisis. So it's always interesting when the president is here, and I think this time around even more so.
You mentioned golf. You know, I don't think the president likes to talk about it. He wants to make it seem like he's always hard at work, but he does play plenty of rounds of golf on his vacation. It seems like a lot of the reporters are just basically sitting around waiting for him to get off the golf course. Any insight into his golf plans over the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, well, I think we can expect plenty of rounds. I mean, he is the, you know, Golf Digest did call him the golfer in chief. And he is someone who has been very close to the sport, both as a player, but also as a business owner. He owns a lot of golf courses, including the two here in Palm Beach County that he frequents when he's in town. And I think the issue is not so much. I think in this area, this is one area where I think as the press, we sort of lose some perspective. I think the issue is not whether he's spending time golf course and playing golf. I think the question is, who is he playing golf with? And, you know, that's why we do. We remind social media. We try to find who he's out playing golf with. And, you know, a great anecdote about this time last year, he was playing golf with Lindsey Graham. And as you recall, Lindsey Graham was one of his harshest critics. And during that round of golf, Mr. Trump is supposed to have said to Lindsey Graham, hey, you know, you're a middle of the road guy. I want you to be 100% for Trump. And, you know, sure enough, in the last year, Lindsey Graham has been one of his biggest supporters in the Senate. So I think the real issue when he's in the golf links, yeah, I think a lot of reporters sit around waiting for him to be done. I think the issue is we should be out there reporting, because who he's playing golf with really matters. It'd be very important.
Yeah, it sounds like he practices some golf diplomacy there and winning over some of his critics. Now, he meets with people on the golf course. He meets with people in Mar-a-Lago. These are working vacations to some degree for him. Who does he meet with? It's not just, relaxing over the holidays, is it?
Yeah, I mean, it is really a parade of different players and characters. I mean, we've got, we've seen Sean Hannity has been here, the Fox News Channel. You know, he's been very close to them, and they've been sort of this kitchen cabinet of advisors over at the network. So that's one group. And then the really important group is the Mar-a-Lago members. I mean, these are people, these are the one percenters. These are some of the most important movers and shakers in American business and in global business and in society. And they have, direct access to them. Well, maybe not direct. I mean, that may be overstating it, but they do have, they're going to be in his proximity. And he does seek out their counsel. We know, for example, the General Accountability Office, the GAO, is looking into the role that three Mar-a-Lago players, including three Mar-a-Lago members, including the chairman of Marvel, that, the role that they've played in the Veterans Administration. So I think that, this is a really important, facet of this is the Mar-a-Lago members and, them whispering in his ear and, the policies that come with it. And that's one of the reasons why I think if we can cue this clip, this audio clip that we got from an interview that we did with Crew, the watchdog in Washington that is out seeking visitor logs, let's hear what they have to say.
I think especially this president, because we know that he relies on so often on sort of a cadre of outsiders for advice. They have outsized influence on decisions that he makes. And yet we have no access to who they even are, except when we learn, either that someone's been nominated and you can see that they were a Mar-a-Lago member, or, some of the stuff that's come out about the three members who have had a great deal of influence on the VA.
Yeah, and that's the precisely the concern, that there is this group of people that he has drawn from. In fact, you've got Wilbur Ross as the Commerce Secretary. He was a Palm Beacher, and all these folks that hang out with them at Mar-a-Lago. So there's a lot of, there's an effort to get these visitor logs to find out who he's meeting with. Of course, those logs wouldn't tell you what they're discussing, but at least now you know who he's meeting with and who might be trying to influence him or trying to get access to him.
Yeah, so there's a lot that happens at Mar-a-Lago. People get the president's ear. He's also tweeting a lot, and they're often very newsworthy events, and the Palm Post is all over it. Check out their website throughout the next few weeks to see what Trump is up to at Mar-a-Lago over the holidays. Meanwhile, Trump ally and governor-elect Ron DeSantis continues to fill out his administration and plan for the upcoming legislative session. DeSantis got some good budget news this week. State budget forecasters revised their revenue estimate upward by $461 million, and the state is now projected to pull in an additional $1.5 billion for the 2018-2019 budget year compared to what they had to spend this year. That's a 4.8% increase. I caught up with Senate President Bill Galvano this week in an event, and he was pretty happy about the revenue forecast. Lawmakers always like to have more money to spend, obviously, but he also sounded a note of caution. Let's hear that clip.
But, I still take that with a grain of salt. We've got a major impact from Hurricane Michael that, a bill that we still have to pay for. Even though we will get some reimbursement, 70% or so down the road, it's not happening this fiscal year. We're still trying to get reimbursements from Irma to, mid-300 millions. And, we just have to be realistic in how we approach what we have. And, in just a perfect world, all of these great programs would be in play.
So that's Galvano saying he takes the rosy budget news with a grain of salt. And he mentioned Hurricane Michael this year, which caused the state to spend a ton of money on disaster relief. And there's all kinds of other programs that people are trying to get funded. So, it sounds like he's proceeding with caution, even though the budget news is fairly good. John Kennedy, what are you hearing about the budget numbers up there in Tallahassee?
Well, it is a little bit of a caution right now. During the governor's race, DeSantis's economic plans were mostly centered on continuing basically, what Governor Scott had done. push for more jobs, cut regulations, and give companies tax breaks. But these already he's starting to see some early headwinds, I think, that could make this strategy outdated and, you know, maybe more suited to the campaign trail than the realities of running a $89 billion enterprise of state government. You've had a roller-coastering Wall Street, a strong U.S. dollar right now that could discourage foreign tourists coming to Florida. And then you have the need to rebuild a panhandle that was blasted by Hurricane Michael. So all that is kind of making the idea that DeSantis can just say, you know, he's echoing the jobs mantra that Scott used for 8 years. That may not work anymore. But indeed, as you pointed out with the latest revenue estimating, it may be a little early for talk of gloom and doom. The economists just increased their revenue forecast, as you pointed out, and that actually is, if you accumulate the 2 years that they talked about the increase, that's an increase of $842 million that the state will have to play with going forward. And that's the largest bump that they've had in 12 years. So you're seeing solid sales tax and corporate income tax collections. That's among the drivers. And the economists, though, they too are saying, you know, that the economy right now has a, as they described it, a, quote, elevated level of risk. So what they're worried about is pretty much Hurricane Michael. You know, you had that storm had already erased what had been expected to be a $223 million budget surplus. And the cost of that storm, nobody really has a good handle on yet. And it's still going to be climbing higher with the amount of money that the state is going to have to put in. You also have a possible tourism slump where you had that strong U.S. dollar compared to other currencies, that could discourage foreign visitors coming to Florida. We mentioned a little bit of this in last week's podcast about how 13% of state sales tax revenues come from tourists, and really any dip will hurt. And in the big mosaic of the state budget, tourism has been a success story for the state, that it's offset what has been a still sluggish residential construction industry, which is still well below what it was back, you know, pre-recession days. But there's more to worry about too. I mean, they have a school shortage of dollars, where tax dollars that normally pay for school construction, now they're coming in about $75 million less than expected. Bright Futures Scholarship. There's more kids enrolling in Bright Futures. I guess, you know, it was expanded a couple of years back, and you're starting to see the product of that. Now it's going to cost state lawmakers another $84.5 million extra. So the new governor, you know, he'll be submitting his budget recommendation. He's required to do it 30 days before the March 5th start of the legislature. So we'll probably see from DeSantis what he has in spending on his mind, probably in the month of February. And, you know, while unemployment remains low in the state, the economists for the state are, again, advising lawmakers to consider really cutting spending over the next 3 years. So any ambitious plans that DeSantis may have are going to have to fit into those confines, probably. And, you know, although the big revenue forecast may free some cash for short-term spending, the tax collections that play a central role in paying school and healthcare, the two biggest silos in the state budget, you know, they're still going to be watching it very carefully to see where those dollars are going and how to best deploy them.
And John, this was a bit of a surprise, wasn't it? There was sort of a sense that maybe the economy was softening and that, you know, the revenues might not be as robust potentially as expected, but to have an extra $461 million with not really expected, was it?
Yeah, I mean, it's showing that the, you know, consumer confidence in the state now has been down for 4 months, and it's at its lowest level now in you know, more than a year. But somehow people were still spending, you know, during the last few months. Now some of the spending is hurricane related. You know, we. As I mentioned about the impact of Hurricane Michael, so some of the there is some level of rebuilding that was going on, but yeah, the dollars are still out there, and the public still seems to be spending. But I think there is a general feeling that that may not last that long, that there could be a tightening in the coming year.
Well, despite the rosy revenue forecast, I think one reason lawmakers also are cautious about getting too excited about the budget is they know that no matter how much money they have, there's never enough to go around. I was at a Manatee County legislative delegation meeting today, and it was basically just a parade of people asking for money. Money for everything from new university buildings to mental health counseling to a new bridge over the Manatee River. But one issue that came up again and again was the issue of red tide, which we've talked about quite a bit on this podcast. It was a big deal during the election. Everyone from county commissioners to a local chamber of commerce official spoke about the need for more funding to study red tide at this delegation meeting that I was at. The red tide algae blooms have really been devastating for much of Florida throughout the year. And after the meeting, I spoke with a lawmaker named Will Robinson, who represents Bradenton community, which was particularly hit by a red tide. And here's what he had to say.
Folks are fed up with this issue and they want action.
So he was saying that really the people that he talked to are just absolutely fed up with this. He told me that this was the number one issue that people spoke to him about on the campaign. Heard that from a number of lawmakers that really, people were really just really devastated by how badly this has hit the tourism industry, how badly it had affected the environment. When you have dead fish washing up on the beach and in the bays and bayous, it really diminishes what Florida is all about, which is the beautiful weather, the beautiful environment. But red tide is a pretty complicated issue. It's fed by nutrients that leach from septic tanks and stormwater runoff and other sources of human-caused pollution. But it's also naturally occurring, and it's not going away, even if we reduce nutrient pollution. And with that in mind, one of the more interesting funding requests that came up today was from Moat Marine Laboratory, which has studied red tide for a long time. It's based here in Sarasota. And the director, Michael Crosby, wants funding to research technologies that potentially could kill red tide and make the blooms smaller. The trick is not killing everything else in the water. So we'll have to see where this funding request goes. But I think we're going to be hearing quite a bit about red tide during the next legislative session. A lot of candidates, including Ron DeSantis, promised to do something about it. Well, with that, we're going to move on to our pick a number segment, and we'll start from lowest to highest. John, you had a 3. Want to explain what that is?
Yeah, my 3 is the number of current House members that Governor-elect DeSantis has picked already to serve in his administration, the latest being State Rep. Danny Burgess, a Zephyr Hills Republican and Army Reserve captain that he named to be the head of the state's Veterans Affairs Committee. Veterans Affairs Department. Another Republican, Halsey Bashirs of Monticello, he's been named Secretary of the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, and a Democrat, Jared Moskowitz from Broward County, he was named Chief of the state's Department of Emergency Management. So, clearly DeSantis, here's a guy who's a former 3-term congressman with no Tallahassee experience. He's looking to get some experienced hands on board. It's a little bit of a shift from his predecessor, Rick Scott, who came in on a Tea Party platform, very much anti-establishment, and he endured some pretty rough treatment from the legislature in his opening year. And of course, he also dished it out with a record number of vetoes to state lawmakers. But, I think generally you're seeing DeSantis with the idea that he's going to try to, kind of play nice with the legislature. He's trying to get some ready ambassadors, I think, that can help him with legislation. He's got stuff from the campaign, obviously, he wants to get done. School choice expansion is one of his priorities. And he talked about requiring businesses to access a federal database to verify the immigration status of workers. And legislation on that topic was just filed this week. So, Florida has had a long debate over that issue of E-Verify. I think DeSantis is thinking maybe this is the year he can get it done. But he's lining up people that have some in-house Tallahassee experience, and that could help this outside governor.
It's interesting he's pulling all of these lawmakers from the House, which tends to be more conservative, and DeSantis ran to the right during the GOP primary for governor on issues like immigration. It seems like he is, pulling from an ideologically similar set of people. You think that portends kind of more of a conservative approach to government from him?
Oh, absolutely. And no more so than we just saw this week, too, another selection of former House Speaker Richard Corcoran as the state's new education commissioner. This while, de facto, it was an appointment by the state's Board of Education. This was somebody that DeSantis wanted. And this guy is, Corcoran is a cagey infighter with a lot of his own ideas on education. And This, though, I think may be a way for DeSantis to kind of keep him on a little bit of a short leash. But indeed, Corcoran shares DeSantis' ideas on promoting school choice. And DeSantis has already talked about expanding the state's biggest voucher program, the tax credit scholarships. So Corcoran will definitely be an advocate for these kind of ideas.
Well, my number also is relating to Ron DeSantis. My number was 2006. And 2006 is the year that Ron DeSantis served at the U.S. Navy base in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. DeSantis was in the Navy JAG Corps, and you know, he served in Guantanamo Bay. Talked quite a bit about on the campaign trail, and mentioned that you know, he was down there, you know, as guarding people, not in being detained. But the reason I brought it up is because it's very interesting. He actually spent Christmas at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba in 2006, and was away from his family. And he brought that up at a debate. Adam Putnam was trying to say that he didn't know too much about Florida and he didn't spend a lot of time in Florida, and that Putnam was the one who really knew Florida inside and out. And DeSantis kind of clapped back at him and said, well, you know, maybe I haven't spent as much time in Florida as you, but that's because I was serving my country in places like Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. So as we approach the Christmas season here, it's worth noting that DeSantis did spend a Christmas in Guantanamo Bay. I assume that Christmas this year will be a little bit happier and spent with family. And I'm sure he'll be enjoying it much more than he did in Christmas 2006. Antonio, your number was 122,916. Want to explain that?
Sure. It's actually a reference to a date, 12/29/16, as in December 29, 2016. And that was a day in which Michael Flynn made that infamous phone call to the Russian ambassador. That was a phone call that he then subsequently lied to the FBI about, which has brought on almost now 2 years worth of investigations of this Trump administration. And I raise it sort of in keeping with the theme of Mar-a-Lago and Mr. Trump being here, but also to point out that what happens at Mar-a-Lago when the president is here can have incredible consequences. It could have incredible actions. There's a lot that happens. It's not just he's on vacation and he's playing golf. There's a lot that happens here, and we're looking forward to the next 2 weeks to report on it.
That's for sure. Plenty of news probably going to be coming out of Mar-a-Lago over the holiday break here. But for us, we're going to take the break, and we're going to take the week off. It's our last podcast of the year. We will see you in the new year, and we just want to say thank you for listening. Hope everybody has a great holiday season.